Thank you for joining us for this month's The Lancet Healthy Longevity in Conversation With podcast. I'm Philippa Harris, the Acting Editor-in-Chief, and today I'm talking to Lindsay Kobayashi from the University of Michigan in the US on an article from our September issue on negative wealth shocks in later life and subsequent cognitive function. So could you just start by telling me what is a negative wealth shock and why did you feel it was important to study this and its association with cognitive function?
Of course. A negative wealth shock can be defined as a sudden and often unanticipated major loss in total net worth. And this could happen for many different reasons, right? For example, something like a personal stressful life event, such as a major illness or chronic condition, a divorce or a death in the family, or something more broad on the societal scale, such as an economic crisis like the Great Recession in 2008. But the key thing with a negative wealth shock is that it is something that happens suddenly in a very short-term period of time and results in a very large loss in wealth. And in research studies, this has been defined in different ways. But in the present study, we defined a negative wealth shock as a loss of 75% or more of an individual's total household wealth over the 3 to 4 year exposure period that we looked at. And here we measured wealth from all different sources. So that included things like housing value, stocks, pension wealth, and liquid assets, for example. And the reason why we thought that it was important to study negative wealth shocks in relation to cognitive function in later life is because there is a large body of evidence that indicates that a range of different markers of socioeconomic status, including wealth itself, are positively associated with cognitive outcomes in later life, such as cognitive function, cognitive decline, and risk of dementia. However, and there is also, I will say, an emerging body of evidence that has linked wealth shocks with health outcomes such as cardiovascular health, mental health, and all-cause mortality. However, there is strong plausibility for an association of a negative wealth shock with a subsequent effect on later life cognitive health based on prior evidence of absolute value of wealth, not so much changes in wealth, and then the association of negative wealth shocks with other health outcomes. And given that later life, you know, after age 65, post-retirement, this is a sort of can be thought of as a sensitive time period in life to experience a negative wealth shock. At this age, older adults are often retired and have limited opportunity to recoup losses through income earned during employment, for example. So we think this is a sensitive period for a wealth shock to occur when adults are often retired and may already be starting to experience some aging-related cognitive decline. So in addition, I would also say that across these four countries that we studied, there have been variations in things like income inequality, in economic circumstances, and so we thought that it would be valuable to do this in the context of a cross-national comparison.
So yeah, as you alluded to, your study looked at data from China, England, Mexico, and the US. So was there a specific reason you chose those four countries to look at?
Yes, we chose these four countries for a few different reasons. First, these are four countries that are at different levels of economic development. China and Mexico are middle-income countries that have had improvements in economic circumstances and GDP in recent decades. And England and the United States are both high-income countries. They're also culturally different in many ways. They also have differences in terms of government policies, such as social safety nets for older adults, like the availability of public pensions and public health care. And we think that individual vulnerability to experiencing a negative wealth shock might be modified by some of these broader macroeconomic and policy-related factors. And while we weren't able to study the roles of policy or economic conditions more broadly in this study, in terms of specific variables that we could analyze, we wanted to look in an initial way to see if there may be variations in the relationship of experiencing a negative wealth shock with subsequent cognitive health in later life across these four countries that vary quite a bit in terms of their economic level, government social safety nets, and other policies.
And was there an association between negative wealth shocks and cognitive functions? And did you see a difference between the individual countries?
Yes. So first, there was an association between negative wealth shocks and cognitive function, but this association did vary a fair amount across these four countries that were under study. So to briefly summarize, in the United States and China, we observed that a wealth loss of 75% or greater in an individual's total household wealth was negatively associated with subsequent cognitive function with quite a strong magnitude of association. But this association was not observed in England or in Mexico.
And was this what you predicted before you started the study, or were there results that surprised you?
Yes, it was somewhat surprising. Personally, I thought that we might see a negative wealth shock to have negative effects on subsequent cognitive function across all of the four countries. But we thought that perhaps it would be stronger in magnitude or worse for subsequent cognitive function in China and in Mexico as middle-income countries with less robust historical social safety nets for their current older populations. However, we saw that, like I said earlier, there was a negative association between experiencing a wealth shock in the US and China, but not in England or Mexico. In England, the point estimate for the result was almost completely null. And this was somewhat not surprising because England, I think, does have a robust social safety net with respect to public health care through the National Health Service, as well as public pensions. In Mexico, this was somewhat surprising. However, Mexico did introduce a public non-contributory pension for older adults age 70 and older in 2007, which might have provided some buffer for older adults who may experience a negative wealth shock in terms of introducing a floor in terms of the negative impact that this might have on financial circumstances. The other thing that I will say is that in England, experiencing a wealth shock was the least frequent or common compared to the other three countries. So, for example, only 4% of older adults in our study population in England experienced a negative wealth shock compared to 10% of older adults in the United States, 16% of those in Mexico, and 26% of those in China. So we may have been unable to observe any negative effects of a negative wealth shock on older adults in England, partly because it was so rare to actually experience a negative wealth shock in England compared to the other countries.
And just to sort of dig into that point a little bit, so obviously you can probably tell from my accent that I'm based in England, and so obviously healthcare costs are not something that is a particular burden to older people, which, you know, it can be in other countries. You know, when you saw the negative wealth shock, do you have any data on how often that was linked to healthcare costs?
Yes, and I'm really glad that you asked that question, because something that we've been asking ourselves quite a bit as a research team is, why do negative wealth shocks happen, right? Like, they don't come out of the blue, and they don't happen randomly. They happen for a reason. And given the data that we had available, and I'll say that the data that we used for this analysis came from the U.S. Health and Retirement Study and its international partner studies in England, Mexico, and China. So these were existing survey data. We were not able to discern the precise reasons why a given person or given household experienced a negative wealth shock in the data that we had. However, one thing that we could do was look at, you know, variables from the study interviews that represented different reasons why a negative wealth shock that you might occur. And what you just mentioned, healthcare costs, is one key reason why we think a negative wealth shock might happen. So, you know, someone in the household experiences a really major, you know, health condition or diagnosis, such as a cancer diagnosis, may not have health insurance available and incurs a catastrophic healthcare cost. We know that is something that happens in the United States to people who do not have access to health insurance. And it may also happen in Mexico and China to a degree. But again, like you said, that doesn't happen in England. So I think that it is possible that that could be one of the mechanisms through which a negative wealth shock may occur. What we were able to do in our data to investigate this possibility was collect data over our exposure time period, you know, immediately prior to and when the wealth shock occurred, on factors such as physician-diagnosed health conditions, self-reports of health. And we also collected data on marital status because we thought that a divorce, so a division of a household, and potentially the death of a spouse as well, could have strong negative effects on total household wealth. And we used inverse probability of treatment weights to address time varying confounding by these factors, which can change over time. And then we applied these weights to our regression models to examine whether a new health condition or a change in marital status could be influencing the likelihood of a negative wealth shock happening. And we actually found that wasn't the case. So it could be that our measure of physician-diagnosed health conditions didn't entirely capture subsequent healthcare costs incurred. So that could still be an explanatory mechanism, and that's something that we are actually digging into a little bit further using data from the U.S. Health and Retirement Study.
And there's definitely lots of interesting factors at play there, aren't there? Because I would imagine that, you know, looking at divorce, it's possible that, you know, women might be affected more financially from divorce if you're looking at people sort of over 75. You know, in the UK, that's a group of people that perhaps were less likely to work for a long period of time and so are less likely to have access to their own pensions. And so their wealth might be more linked to their husbands, for example. And it's interesting that, you know, there's so many factors you need to take into consideration.
Yes, absolutely. And I really like that you raised this point because I think in doing this research, in trying to really kind of understand what might be the reasons for the findings that we saw and then think about the hypotheses for the next paper, I think we do need to take a life course perspective because I think that individual vulnerability or resilience to a negative wealth shock that occurs later in life, you know, in one's 60s or later is likely going to depend on the entire life course history of events that have occurred that influence things like access to wealth and to capital. And I think for the older generation of women, and I'm sure this is true not only in England, but also in the US, Mexico, and China, just like you said, women were often had fewer opportunities to enter the labor force, were less engaged in work, and with the way in which pensions are often tied to employment, women very well may be more vulnerable to the negative effects of a wealth shock. And we didn't look at that here in this paper, but I think it's a very important direction for future research.
So we've obviously touched on kind of lots of factors that might be contributing to your results, but were there any other factors that you feel you need to investigate or you think might be playing a role?
Yeah, so I really do think that some of these, you know, almost sort of catastrophic events that could precede a wealth shock happening, such as a major chronic health condition, a divorce, or a death of a spouse, and even thinking about broader macroeconomic trends within a country, really are plausible explanations for why a negative wealth shock might occur. These are really hard to dig into in a cross-national framework when we are almost limited in a sense in terms of, you know, what data do we have on all of the populations that we wish to study that are comparable. When you conduct a cross-national comparison analysis, you're often limited to, you know, harmonizing variables down to the smallest common denominator. And often you can't look at things in as much fine-grained detail as you might wish. So what we're doing now is we're using data from the U.S. Health and Retirement Study, which I would like to extend to the English Longitudinal Study of Aging as well, because I think it can be very insightful to compare these two high-income countries that vary quite a bit in terms of their social safety nets, to get a longer view of the years of, you know, what happens in people's lives in those years preceding a negative wealth shock and just dig in a little bit more depth into changes in, you know, the family circumstances, marital circumstances, healthcare costs, and health diagnoses. So that's something to look forward to in the future. And then again, like you said, I think gender differences are going to be particularly important here for understanding the role of these economic trends in men and women's cognitive health in later life.
And now sort of taking a step back and thinking about your results in a kind of broader sense, you know, what do you think the policy implications of this data is? You know, what if I'm someone from working in Social Security or something, you know, what do you think we need to do with this data?
Right. I think that, you know, these results taken in context of a broader body of literature on socioeconomic conditions and public policies and healthy aging outcomes indicates that we really cannot underestimate or undervalue the importance of Social Security for older adults and for older populations. As populations are rapidly aging around the world, I think it goes without saying that we are going to be seeing increases in the prevalence of health conditions associated with aging, such as dementia, cardiovascular disease, and cancers. And improving Social Security systems for older adults, and I'm thinking specifically here about the role that public pensions have to play that are not tied to employment, as well as robust health insurance and healthcare services for older adults, can help to protect older adults from life events such as negative wealth shocks, as well as a range of other things in terms of improving resilience and supporting healthy aging.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you so much, Philippa. It was wonderful to speak with you.
Thank you so much to Lindsay for joining us and to you for listening. So the article we discussed can be found in our September 2023 issue and is open access, so free for everyone to read. And we'll be back next month to continue the conversation.